It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. I know. I have the pleasure of briefly to describing some of the activities of which we're doing here in California. As Jack has mentioned, this is part of a federal grant program of which is operating in a number of states, as well as tribal organizations and college campuses. We in California have had the pleasure of having this project operating, in fact, right here in San Diego. And so I will be sharing the microphone with my colleague here, Freddy DeCiccio, who is the local program manager for the ESPR delivery here. What you will hear, what you'll have is an opportunity to hear both from a state level as well as from a local level, what are some of the issues around the implementation of ESPRT on both of the various levels, as well as what it pretends as far as the future. You're going to have some redundancy right now, because I'm going to share just briefly a little bit about the background about ESPRT, of which really ties in quite well and with what Jack was talking about. Quite clearly, the impact of alcohol and other drug use is one which has significant costs, both at the individual level, the family level, as well as the broader community level. In addition to that, the traditional way in which it's addressed has been focused largely on treatment, as opposed to this other level of use, which has not been addressed largely within our system. Plus, there are a large group of individuals who are using at a level of where they are not currently at, could be diagnosed as either a substance abuse disorder or dependency. So that is some of the background around which this project is based on. When we look at, here's another why ESPRT slide, but it's going to have a little bit different information. One is that the data has shown that early and brief intervention is indeed more clinically effective and more cost efficient than traditional, more intensive treatment. When you look at the overall population figures. Secondly, we've shown that level of use is often undiagnosed. Some of what Rick was sharing with you is largely what is taking place. That level of use is not being picked up. Thirdly, and that the negative consequences of alcohol and drug use are indeed there. Whether or not you could be diagnosed, there are still negative consequences which should in fact be addressed. In addition to that, we have taken the why ESPRT and then looked at what are the program goals of which we have here in California. One is that we want to increase clinically appropriate care. Secondly, we want to be able to develop linkages between the primary care system as well as our traditional specialized treatment systems. In addition to that, our goal here in California is really to have a complete continuum of care, which runs all the way from primary prevention all the way through treatment and recovery, so that we have the level of interventions all the way through our entire system. And lastly, we are committed to building a broad-based coalition among all of the healthcare services. And so those are the goals of which we are indeed focused on. Now, in terms of how we are working to operationalize that, is that we are focused on not just what's taking place here in San Diego. We're using what's taking place in San Diego is as a demonstration and as an opportunity and to really show the effectiveness of these services with the intention to then look at expanding the services throughout our overall care system, which includes trauma centers, hospital ED departments, primary care facilities, community health centers, and then I want to focus on the last two, the educational institution, both at the higher ed, but also we're working and at the secondary level and through looking at student assistance programs as a vehicle and to have screening and in brief intervention there. And lastly, in the criminal justice settings. In doing so, our program right now here in San Diego really looks at the implementation of screening and brief intervention in the medical settings, both at the ED, the trauma units, the health centers, as well as in primary care clinics. In doing so, our model is using peer health educators. What you will find is that there are a number of different ways in which ESPRT can be delivered, either by the health practitioner, his or herself, or by health educators, or by treatment counselors. And so there are a number of different ways. In San Diego right now, we are using a peer health educator approach. We're also, and both to do the screening as well as the brief intervention. What I'd like to do now is have Ray to come up and share with you briefly about what is taking place right here in San Diego.
Thank you, Captain Mahoney. Good morning, everybody. Those of you who have not received my handout, please raise your hand. Bonnie has graciously agreed to help me. My name is Ray DeCicio, and I just want to tell the story of San Diego County real quickly. San Diego County has been doing screening, brief intervention, referral, and treatment for over a decade, and we've had the luxury of actually having those services be in place for a number of years, stopped for over a year, and then we had to bring the services back. So we got a great view of how to do this. As Michael mentioned, we do use a peer health educator model. And the way that came about is early on we found out that doctors and nurses are very resistant to adding screening, brief intervention, and referral to their responsibilities in emergency rooms and trauma rooms. And for good reasons. They're very, very busy. And, they're often not experienced enough or have the tools to actually do an effective screening and brief intervention. And even when they do have the motivational interviewing techniques and the experience, they're often called away to other priorities, and so the process is interrupted. So the systems are not there, and the process is not good for them. So we found out that even in the middle of our providing our services, that we tried to bring doctors and nurses back into it, and we found out that the services degraded very, very rapidly. So we did develop a paraprofessional peer health educator model. It's really a health educator model. The health educators are managed. They're hired, recruited, trained by us for the whole region of San Diego County. So we recruit, we hire, we train the health educators, and we place them at the hospitals. We are currently at 12 hospitals. It took us a year to revamp all of those hospitals. We found out that it's a very tedious process to develop a business associate agreement, a memorandum of agreement with a hospital, to get peer educators sited at that site. So we had to make sure that our employees had all of the drug tests, the TB tests, background checks, all of the things that are required. We had to make sure that the HIPAA regulations were, met, and everything was encrypted and decrypted, and it was just a real legal mess. But we persevered through each one of those, and what we found out was that once we got our peer health educator or our health educators stationed at those hospitals became our most became our partners, and they became our most important asset and ally. And you know, we found out that it's possible to contract with agencies all over the county and to provide them with individualized services while providing them with basically the same services throughout the county. So we really cherish our relationship with the hospitals, and it's well worth going through the process. One of the things that it was mentioned that the peer health educator model is here in San Diego, and one of the things that we do is we screen everybody that walks through the room in the emergency department or the trauma department or the health clinic where we were at when the health educator is on duty. So if anybody that walks through the room, there's an attempted screen. They're screened using the assist, but we did add a couple of the audit questions so that we could get at the frequency and amount of alcohol that they were drinking, particularly recently. Each one of our health educators, when they're hired, we take them through a very rigorous training and certification process. It takes weeks to learn all of the scripts and blurbs that we teach them. We took the process of doing screening and brief intervention, made it motivational at every step. We make sure that every health educator has those screens and interventions memorized. They anticipate all of the most frequent questions. They have responses that they can make to those questions. So they're very well trained. They're videotaped before they go out onto the floor. And they're actually, we have site supervisors that supervise them and shadow them the first several months that they're out on the floor. So they also go through a very rigorous orientation process at each different hospital. So they're dressed up in scrubs. They introduce themselves as a health educator on duty. They're going to ask some questions to help the medical team with their diagnosis and treatment. Every patient receives the clinically appropriate brief intervention. In your handouts there, you have the program brochure, and it shows the levels of risk that the screen will tell you. You have no or low risk, at risk, high risk, severe risk. The people at no or low risk receive an education, a congratulation. At risk, they receive the brief intervention, which is motivational, and your other brochure there that says alcohol use at the top. They actually use this brochure as they go through the brief intervention. It gives them the information that they need to tell them about the risks that they're experiencing if they're drinking alcohol at a risky level. Then on the back of that folder, they actually can go through a process of determining what their goals might be, their you know, their inclination to change, and then actually help them determine what strategies they would actually be willing to do. So it's in line with all of the motivational interviewing techniques that we studied, and it's done very quickly. It's very cost-effective, and they make a for all of those that fall into the high-risk category, they make a motivated. They give them the brief intervention, and they also refer them to our brief treatment program using motivational interviewing techniques. And our brief treatment program mostly is done by phone. We have clinicians, a PhD, MSW, and other clinicians, and they are trained to use motivational interviewing techniques and cognitive behavioral, and they have a whole program. By the way, you can get all of this information. Our website just went up yesterday, so it's www.casbirt. That's CASBIRT.org, and much of this information is on the website. It's a little slow right now because of my server, but the information is there. So our brief treatment program has 6 to 12 sessions. They can take them through that treatment program either on the phone or in person. And That's been proven to be very effective for us, in that we've been able to get most of the people who are who actually make contact with our brief treatment program get 3 or 4 doses of the intervention. So we're very happy about that. There are considerable practice implications in this systemic approach that we've taken, where we're doing over 1,200 screens per week in just 12 sites. And that's 6 hospitals, and 5 hospitals, I'm sorry, and 1 community clinic right now. We expect to expand a little bit more to other community clinics and probably be doing 1,500 screens per week. But this systemic approach, it provides timely and relevant information to physicians about substance use. We know from the feedback that we get from our physicians that we get much more information from the patient than they or their nurses do. They really appreciate that. It helps them in their diagnosis and treatment. It's effective intervention in a disease process. We know that from some of the data that Jack had shared with you, and that we've actually found out ourselves. We are actually giving the doctors the information on the card, so they can choose whether to put that information into the medical record or not. Now, with the recent repeal of the UPPL laws, which in California, which now prohibit insurance companies from refusing to pay for these services or any services because a patient is using or drinking, we are actually now getting requests from the hospitals and from the doctors to give them more information that they can put into the medical record, because now the insurance companies cannot refuse to pay. So they find that very valuable. A large-scale application of ESPRT may reduce regional healthcare costs. I'm going to go through this very quickly. There's a lot of benefits, including increased patient flow, improved patient care, the reach. Actually, right now, we have over 41,000 screens, and we're rapidly increasing. One of the things that we found out very quickly, very early on, is that a large portion of our population is over 55, and most of them are over 65. You can see that the large number of people that we serve, there's certainly a lot of people who are at risk, 15%. High-risk and severe-risk people get referred to, severe-risk people get referred to our treatment programs here in San Diego County. We use a motivated referral follow-up system for that. What we found out so far is very similar to what Jack told you, that our 30-day abstinence after the intervention has a very significant increase. These are not research numbers, but they're administrative numbers. All of our other numbers are very similar to the numbers that he gave you. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to
Michael, we just have 1 minute, okay. And then
what I'd like to do now is just share, just quite quickly, where we're going with this. One is that we're looking at expanding this, as I've said, into other settings. We're also looking at establishing some partnerships with this service, both in the higher ed community, the medical community, as well as the criminal justice community. In doing so, we are now working to expand ESPRT into the jail detainee setting in LA County, in that we will be starting to screen all of the jail detainees within LA County. And so that will be a major expansion and opportunity for us to learn what's taking place there. In addition to that, we will be holding a series of trainings throughout the state in 4 primary counties, and to look at screening is now required in the trauma units, we will be holding the trainings in order to encourage and facilitate that. As a part of these trainings, we'll also be offering some on-site TA. And so we're trying to use our own resources in order to expand it. Lastly, we're looking at how do we get the resources behind it. We're working to have it have the codes activated within our state Medicaid system, which in California is Medi-Cal. We're also will be working with the private insurance carriers. As Ray had mentioned, we were successful this round with getting and the UPPL repeal. And so we are really working to have that, really working to capitalize on that taking place. As far as some final thoughts, ESPR does focus on a teachable moment, and as you've seen thus far, the data is indeed compelling. In addition to that, we're looking to expand a number of settings in the state, and finally, we will really work to continue to support the broadest implementation of ESPR all throughout the state. Thank you.
Now we're going to shift a little bit geographically towards Texas, and we have Dr. Joe Tamaka, who is an associate professor in health promotion from